The Fitness Hacks Podcast, Episode 9. Today we're talking with Josh Henkin, the creator of the Ultimate Sandbag and the DVR T-System.
Welcome to the Fitness Hacks Podcast by Redefining Strength. Breaking down fitness and the fitness business with some of the best names in the industry. And here are your hosts, Corey Lefkowitz and Ryan Heenan.
So I think, you know, from the marketing angle, it's never about the tool. It's never about trying to be hardcore. It's listening to the client, trying to develop a plan with them. They're like, how are they going to be successful? And then gaining that trust by actually delivering on the things that you say you can do for them.
Those are some words of wisdom from Josh Henkin. And today we talk a lot about all the different tools out there in the fitness industry and how there are so many of them and which should you trust and which are complete garbage with just good marketing campaigns behind them.
Talking with him was so interesting because even though he has a certification and a product, he also talks about how trainers go out and try and learn too much, and they almost spend so much time learning about all these new tools and the latest fad that they never actually implement all the different things that they've learned with their clients.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I think it goes along with certifications as well, where trainers want to hop from certification to certification and think that they're improving themselves, but really they're not doing anything that's going to allow them to reach more clients and master any single set of skills that then they can become an expert in.
He does bring up the business aspect of everything and say that it is important that you learn how to actually get the clientele so that you can actually help people. But he does go into the fact that we think of so many of the new tools as toys instead of learning how to properly implement them and using the correct tool to reach the correct goal.
And Josh points out that a lot of trainers and gym owners, they make the mistake of highlighting the features rather than the benefits of both products and training, and that's detrimental to their marketing efforts. So let's just jump right into it with Josh Henkin. Today we're joined by Josh Henkin. Josh, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and your fitness journey and what led to your passion for fitness?
Well, thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate the opportunity to share my story and some ideas. Basically, everything started for me when I was pretty young. I fell in love with basketball at an early age. I tend to be taller than most kids at my age, so you know it was much easier to play back then. Unfortunately, about the age 14, I suffered a really bad ankle injury to the point where they weren't sure if I was going to be able to walk quite right again. And so the idea of playing basketball again was just a pipe dream. And when you're that young, you don't really think about really much beyond that scope. So fortunately, I went through physical therapy and had a great therapist and definitely worked through it to the point where I was playing ball the next year, even though I started my freshman year in high school in crutches, which was not so much fun. You know, ironically, about 6 months later, I suffered a really bad back injury, which, you know, in retrospect, was probably somewhat related to the ankle and the instability of my foot. And that sort of sent me down the whole path because that was a herniated disc at age 14. And that was a 6 month, you know, sort of recovery time. And so I got introduced to physical therapy pretty early. And once I started coming back, I was very fortunate enough to have a coach who at the time was an assistant strength coach with the Chicago White Sox. So he introduced me to the world of strength conditioning. And, you know, I realized pretty early on that wasn't probably going to be a pro athlete. And so especially with my, you know, prone to injury history. And I really fell in love with the idea of making people better through sort of a combination of therapy and strength conditioning.
I love the Ultimate Sandbag philosophy, and I love that you have sort of your DVRT. Can you sort of go into a little bit about that and how that came about?
Sure. You know, I fought my back injury for quite some time. You know, I come back and I end up walking onto my college basketball team. And during some conditioning, we were doing single A plyos, and I just felt a shot, like a lightning bolt, go up my right leg. And, you know, tried to fight through it when I was doing a combination of therapy and going to practice every day. And eventually the injury won out where I just dropped like a rock one day doing sprints just because my leg just hurt so bad from my back. And so they unceremoniously retired me. And in the university level, you know, once you're done being of use to them, they don't really care what happens to you after. So it was up to me to do something for myself. And at the time I was going for a degree in exercise science. So it was nice. I was already interested in finding out what that was, but I quickly learned that what I was learning in school wasn't very applicable to what I needed to do in the real world. And so I started looking really outside to what current strength coaches were doing at the time. And, you know, down the road, just got introduced to this crazy kettlebell concept back in about 2002. And, you know, I looked at the material and I said to my friend who was trying to encourage me to go, I'm like, I don't know, man, this looks a lot like what you can do with a dumbbell. And he just said, just go and just, you know, take it in. It's just, it's different. And he couldn't really explain it to me at the time. And I remember taking his word upon it, going to the RKC in 03. And, you know, I fell in love with a concept more than a tool that Pavel shared very early on, which was focusing on movement and using the tool to emphasize movement. And I think even to this day, people sort of, you know, forget that even in regards to kettlebells, they get fixated on exercises. And so a lot of the philosophy from there was really shaped upon, you know, exploring, you know, how do we sort of look at movement? How do we define it? And how do we start, you know, systemizing it? Because, you know, at that time I asked Pablo, you know, how do you learn more about this material? And he said, you know, read the old stuff. And I thought that he meant like the stuff from the 80s, but he meant stuff way older than that. And so, you know, fortunately with the internet, you could look up material now and you can try to you know, learn what old time, you know, athletes were doing. The only trouble was that because of the lack of the internet, communication amongst, you know, a lot of these athletes was very minimal. So they all had their own philosophy and methodology. It wasn't like Eugene Sandow was posting his WOD of the day to Arthur Saxon or anything like that. So trying to find commonalities was something I was trying to see and seeing any patterns. And they all spoke about odd object lifting in some form or another. And that kind of intrigued me because even though they didn't have the science, they kept referring to, you know, things like core strength and stabilizer strength. And, you know, they said it a different way, but that was basically what they were implying and, you know, how this strength was so necessary for real world activities and improving their performance. And so, you know, while the idea of, you know, having railroad tracks and barrels was, you know, kind of enticing, the implement that I sort of, you know, went for was a sandbag, just because the former athlete in me definitely fell hook, line, and sinker when, you know, they kept saying that was like the hardest thing to do. So of course I wanted to do the hardest thing. And so I made, you know, the traditional duffel bag out of garbage bags and duct tape. And, you know, I approached it like I would a barbell. And initially I definitely found it to be so much more challenging. Someone, you know, I had been lifting for quite a few years at that point, probably close to 10 years I'd been lifting. So it wasn't like I was a novice at it. And it was just so different than anything I'd done in the, and especially when the loads were so much less than I was used to lifting. And so I did what any good coach would do. And I started applying it with all my clients, of course, and, you know, abusing them with it. And, you know, the running joke was, you know, Josh was this guy that you could follow the trail of sand with, you know, throughout the gym. And so it worked for a little bit. And, you know, I started getting a little frustrated because my own training and that of my clients sort of got stalled. And I sort of stepped back and I said, wow, you know, maybe there's a reason this thing's never really been a mainstream training tool. That's always sort of been a, I would almost say like a shock value type of implement. And, you know, I said, you know, either the implement's flawed or the system that we're using is flawed, or, you know, a combination of the two. And so a friend of mine just said to me sort of out of the blue one day, we were training in my garage. He's like, what would you do differently? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I'm just a coach. I don't think like that. I just think about what's in front of me. And he said, well, what if you could create something different, what would it be? And so that sort of set the, you know, idea of, wow, you know, what would we do to create something, a very specific tool to meet the demands of movement, strength, conditioning, and overall well-being. And so that was sort of the, you know, spark plug. And then from there, it's been, you know, almost 12 years now of developing and refining the system and the tool over time, because there really was no, you know, guidelines. You know, as much as people like to say, oh, here's a tool that's been around forever, it's been around, but no one's really systemized it. No one's really talked about progressions with it. No one's talked about the unique aspects and attributes of it as far as how do you implement into programming. So that's something we've really tried to do, because, you know, I give the example. In Olympic weightlifting, the sort of the cornerstone book in Olympic weightlifting is a book by Arthur Dreschler, and it's like over 500 pages, and it's 500 pages basically for two exercises. You know, that's the extent that we look at Olympic weightlifting, and the biggest book I could find at the time that related to sandbag training was about 48 pages, and about 2/3 of it was pictures. So it's definitely something that I noticed that there's deficiency upon. So, you know, really what we try to do is to change the whole perception. And so DVRT stands for dynamic variable resistance training. So we try to talk about a system of training versus just, you know, sandbag training, because that's not very meaningful to people. There's nothing, unlike Olympic weightlifting or powerlifting, that really resonates as far as principles and concepts when people talk about sandbag training. They're usually just referring to an implement. So that's really what we've been trying to change in the industry. And hopefully we've been doing a pretty decent job at that, and, you know, showing people the unique benefits of the tool and the system.
I love the fact that you had all of this come out of the fact that you wanted people to move better in everyday life, because I think so often clients come in and, you know, that is really their goal, but they get very caught up in, you know, just doing things like working out for working out's sake and moving for moving's sake in the gym. And they don't think about how these things are going to affect them in everyday life. And you've taken this tool and developed the system. And actually talking to Dan Ritchie the other week, we talked about how as people get older, they want to be able to keep moving at the quality and having the quality of life that they had when they were younger. And you're sort of taking this tool and this system and putting the processes in place so that someone young can also move better in everyday life. Do you find there's sort of like an educational process you have to go through when people come to you and sort of think, you know, we're in the age of CrossFit, I just want to work out really hard, I want to do the hardest workout possible? Is there sort of like an educational process you have to go through with them to sort of get them to accept that sometimes not just lifting heavy or doing a workout for workout's sake is that important?
Yeah, you know, I think the education starts with the professionals, because I think it's sort of a trickle down. And so, you know, it rarely does the client sort of dictate what the coach wants to do. So I think it's about the coach educating, communicating to the client, and relating it to the needs and the wants that they have too. Just like, you know, it's sort of a nice balancing act. You have to give people what they want and what they need at the same time. But yeah, I think it's, to answer your question, I think it's about education, just changing the way we see how we structure fitness. I think so many people are in love with exercises and they forget about what movements are. And we talk about movement when we don't know what an exercise does, sort of like it's that really weird, vague thing. Like you see this exercise that you don't really understand, so you just call it a movement-based exercise, versus like really understanding and defining what movement is and really understanding how we progress it and where we start. And when you sort of tap into that and you have a system in place of addressing movement and you understand how the body actually works, then creating change happens so rapidly that it almost seems like a magic trick. And it puts people in this moment of disbelief. Like, I can't believe you just did that. Whether it's, you know, improving the range of motion or decreasing the pain that they have. And it's not really, you know, magic. It's just understanding how the body works. And so unfortunately, I think, you know, fitness gets caught up in these buzzwords. And we don't, you know, set forth, you know, like most industries, a definition, and then there's a system of principles behind it. We get into these little sound bites and go, that's really good, I want to do that. And, you know, and so unfortunately, I think coaches get caught up in just much as anyone, just as much as the general public. And, you know, I never blame the general public, because there's so much information out there. It's completely impossible for them to, you know, go through everything and be critical about what's good and what's bad. And I think, you know, exercise is traditionally, at least the last, you know, almost 100 years, been one of those things of like, you know, the worse that you feel by it, the better it is. And so shifting people's paradigm and being like, hey, I can actually do hard stuff, I can actually feel challenged, but I can leave feeling good, is a unique thing. And they almost think it's not valuable unless they hurt. But, you know, it's showing them how if I move better, then I can use the right muscles better, I can be more efficient in my movement, I can do my conditioning longer. And that obviously will result in a better fitness outcome as well. So it's not like this movement thing is separate from the goals that they have. I think it's about showing them how it's actually so important to develop it so that they can achieve the fitness goals that they have. So I think, you know, relating in that, like, hey, if you come to me and you want to have fat loss, well, the more efficient that you can move, the more you can use the right muscles, the less pain that you have, the better a chance you're going to be able to drop body fat. And they're like, okay, sounds good. So I think it's putting in context that's meaningful to them. So that's what we try to do, but we try to educate the fitness professional enough so they understand where they're going, the direction they're going with the training, so that they can avoid the, hey, we saw a novel exercise, let's go do that. And they understand a system in place of how to address people's specific needs.
It's such a great point. And I also want to go back to the fact that you touched on using the sandbag, you had to use a lighter weight. But when I'm working with my clients often, I'll be like, it's not just about repeating the movement or doing the harder movement or trying to add more weight. It's about feeling the right muscles work. It's about getting the most out of the movement and really getting the most bang for your buck in the shortest amount of time, because you're doing things correctly to perfect your movement patterns, to engage the correct muscles. And it doesn't matter what weight you're using. Sometimes using the lighter sandbag weight can be all you really need. And I mean, I know that, and I'm trying to pass it on to my clients, but I've learned that through different certifications. And I know you guys started some certifications with the Ultimate Sandbag. How did you sort of decide that certifications were the route you were going to go with your business?
Well, we believed everything was, you know, when people say, hey, you have a sandbag business, I say, actually, we don't. And they sort of look at me with a crooked eye and like, what do you mean you don't? You're known for the Ultimate Sandbag. And, you know, really our business is a solution-based fitness program. And so it's the education that drives everything. So if when people come up to me at conferences, they're like, oh man, I have your sandbag. Isn't that great? And I, you know, say, thank you. I appreciate it. But you know, how are you using it? Because just like any other tool, you can use it really intelligently and get phenomenal results, or you can use it, you know, sorry to say, pretty dumb, which is unfortunate what I see most of the time. And, you know, then the tool gets criticized, and it's not the tool, it's the methodology behind it. And so, you know, it's getting people to understand, you know, the unique attributes that, you know, really throw them off. Because one of the things I learned early on is that the sandbag is not a barbell. And that's something we say jokingly in our programs, and people sort of laugh, but at the same time, and try and drive home the point, is if you're addressing this tool as, oh, it's something else, you're missing the whole point, and you're going to miss how to program it properly. And that each tool has some unique attributes, advantages and disadvantages. So if you don't maximize those advantages by altering your program, you're never going to get the benefit. And so that's where you get coaches that jump from tool to tool. And I hate when coaches call things toys, because you would never hear a doctor, a lawyer, or any other industry call something a toy. You know, our tools are a way of expressing our philosophy and coaching our clients. And so they should be used because they create a stimulus that is unique, and that's something that we want to achieve specifically for that client. So it's like, instead of just having this group of toys out there, looking at it really as like a craftsman and trying to be expert craftsman, I think is a far more, you know, a more efficient way of looking at it. And it raises our own perceived value to our clients. I think, unfortunately, clients have a bad, you know, taste in their mouth of the industry, and rightfully so. And so if we can do our part in going, hey, we're going to use the right tool. I mean, the analogy I always give is, can you imagine going in for surgery and your doctor going, hey, give me a scalpel or a clamp, it doesn't really matter. You'd be horrified. But, you know, that's how coaches approach training all the time. Oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's just a tool. And, you know, even the science is showing us that that's not the case. And yet I think it's a safety spot that coaches feel like if they don't understand something, they can revert back to. Unfortunately, instead of demanding that they find out why and how they're unique and how they can blend together and create synergy, they just sort of follow these sound bites that don't leave them in any better position at all.
You know, you mentioned that there's a lot of information out there on the topic, and I think with a lot of information comes a lot of misinformation. So, you know, you touched on the fact that these are being called toys instead of tools. What are some of the hurdles that you're overcoming to spread that message and get the word out there to stop viewing things as toys instead of tools?
You know, I think aligning ourselves with other great fitness professionals always helps. You know, it's taken us a while because I know, understandably so, the veterans and the people that are higher up in the industry have become cynical themselves, and like new tools coming out, or the idea that if something's old, then somehow it's really valuable. Even if something's old, you still have to establish, you know, why it's, you know, unique and what can it do better than something else. And so I think, you know, when you show, you know, and you educate even the people that have gained notoriety in our industry, how it solves problems for them, then all of a sudden they open up and they really sort of gravitate to you. So it's, you know, the example I always give is I talked to a facility owner one time who specialized in endurance runners. And, you know, he thought that I was coming to talk to him about our ultimate sandbag. And I said to him, I said, you know, what's the biggest problem you have with your clients? He said, oh, just we have a rash of hamstring injuries and just like really bad hamstring tightness. So when I broke down a couple exercises and he immediately saw his range of motion improve in his own body, then he became so much more, you know, accepted and excited about it, because it wasn't about using a tool because today was sandbag day. It was doing it because it solved a need of his, and he did it better with this thing than he could find with anything else. So I think when you show people that things are solutions to problems rather than, you know, focusing on what the tool is, then they become a lot more enthusiastic about it, because that's ultimately what we want. And so that's always the question I ask of coaches. I go, what's the problem? What are you trying to solve? Why are you using that tool? Why are you using that exercise? And I'm not doing that to be a jerk, although I'm sure some perceive it to be that way. But I want us to raise the standard of our coaching industry and being like, hey, I know why I can answer those questions, because inherently you should be able to justify that to your client. If we want to be respected as other professionals, then we have to be able to delve a little deeper than, hey, I saw this exercise on YouTube, it was really cool. Or, hey, so-and-so told me to do this. This is a really cool exercise. It's really hard. You need to be able to discern like what's appropriate, what is the construct of that exercise, how do you break it down, is it valuable, what does it do, and does it do something better than something else?
We definitely have to educate people, and the problem is, though, people are very, very resistant to change. When you sort of put out a new message, people can automatically shut down if you don't present it in the right way. Have you found that this is like a major hurdle in sometimes getting people to even allow you to explain the benefits of sandbag training?
Oh, sure. I mean, I always joke, you know, we sort of say internally that if I can go back in time and do one thing differently, is I wouldn't call it a sandbag, just because that has such a kind of preconception to a lot of people, both good and bad. But, you know, it's like they can't believe such a simple conceptual tool can be so powerful. And, you know, unfortunately, if they knew what went into actually engineering it, they would realize it's not so simple. But beyond that point, just that entrance of like, oh, this is a sandbag. Oh, okay. Well, I think there's a lot of coaches out there that feel almost guilty and they pretend they know what to do with it as though they should know. And then they just sort of don't use it because they really don't know what to do with it. I think what we've heard more times than not is, you know, people don't use the tool. They have it, but they don't use it because they don't know what to do with it. And, you know, that kind of is frustrating because one of the things that we pride ourselves on doing is putting out so much education on it that even if you didn't come to a course, there's enough material out there to get you started and start seeing the benefit of what we do. So I think it's one of those things where people don't want to admit they don't know what to do because of this tool that everyone sort of assumes they know how to use. And people fall into, well, it's been around forever. I go, okay, but if it's been around forever, how come you don't use it? And that sort of gets one of those, you know, they get flustered. And I'm not asking that question to be bothersome, but to ask them, obviously there was some problem in you trying to implement it. Let's try to figure out what that is. And so, you know, like you said, people don't like change. And one of the things as coaches, we try to get people, the clients to do all the time is change. And then when it comes to ourselves, we're like, oh no, I don't want change. This is the way I've always done stuff. So ironically, we're kind of hypocrites when it comes to the change concept because we're all human beings at the end of the day and change is hard for anyone. So, you know, once we can, you know, go past, you know, what the implement is, and that's why if we focus so much on problem solving, then people really open up. I mean, I had a friend who, you know, sort of confessed to me one time. He's like, dude, I watched your stuff for 2 years. I'm just like, it can't be that simple. It can't be that simple. Then I finally just caved and tried it. I'm like, it's that simple. And so it's one of those sort of, you know, admittance things. And I think, you know, unfortunately the industry has sort of become like that because there's so much that comes out and there's good stuff and there's bad stuff. And I always tell people, you know, the good stuff will stand the test of time and the bad stuff doesn't, obviously. But in the meantime, it can be very confusing and very overwhelming and, you know, very easy to chase the, you know, coolest new looking thing. And so when people approach me with a new product or concept, I just try to go down the same path. I try to ask them, what are you trying to accomplish? What does this do differently? How does this solve a problem for me? And, you know, if they can't answer those problems, I mean, that's right off the bat, you know, where I stop with them, because that means they're just trying to sell me something versus then give me a solution.
I know DVRT is so much more than just the sandbag, but how do you handle critics of your sandbag? I have to admit, I was doing a little stalking the other day and I noticed on one of your ads that someone's like, you can just go fill a duffel bag with sand and use that the same way. But your sandbag is actually really unique and I prefer it, which I maybe a little biased, but I prefer it. How do you sort of handle critics to your system, to your sandbag?
Well, you think, I mean, after this interview, you probably think I'm quite a jerk because of all the things I say, but I just try to walk people through down their own process. And so if we get criticism like that, the first thing I often ask that person is that, are you doing that? And typically 9 times out of 10, the answer is no. Well, obviously you don't think it's very good. Otherwise you'd be doing it. You know, and so I think people are, again, you know, it's this thought that I can make this myself. And for most things in fitness, people are not going to make their own kettlebell or their own barbell or their own dumbbell. You know, and the analogy I give people, I go, okay, so you can grab a shot put and you're going to start doing kettlebell training. And it's like, well, no, that would be silly. I go, well, it's the same analogy. And so, you know, walking down people to that path of like, hey, listen, you know, just as you would use the right tool for anything, is you want to use the right tool here. And, you know, again, going back to the earlier point I was making where, hey, if sandbags were so awesome in their current form of just a duffel bag of sand, then everyone would be using them. And if you find on the rare occasion that someone has a duffel bag of sand, they probably use it for about carrying and shouldering, and that's about it. And so that's not a very valuable tool. It doesn't solve a lot of problems. It doesn't give you a lot of versatility. So what we looked at is a couple of the unique attributes what a sandbag should be. And one of the biggest things that people don't understand or appreciate with sandbags is that dimension plays a big role. So dimension plays a role because it can change the outcome of an exercise, and it also can alter the level of instability that we have. And when I often ask people, like, why do you want to use sandbags? They're like, oh, because they're unstable, bro. And I'm like, okay, well, what is that doing for you? And they don't really have an answer other than it's just hard. And so they don't understand that instability has to be progressive. It has to be programmed. And there's different types of instability. We can create instability by the bag being a different dimension, which will allow it to shift differently. We can, you know, create a different level of stability depending upon how we position our body or the angle that we move the weight. So a lot of the, you know, critics, I'm using quotation marks if you can't see me, is that they just don't understand the implement, you know, and that's, you know, the unfortunate part that they don't give an opportunity. And, you know, and I also walked them down the road. I go, okay, if you think that the sandbag is fine as it is, that's fine. Give me the principles of sandbag training. And people, again, give me a, you know, confused look. Like, what do you mean? Like, you go, you do reps and you do exercises and you do a load. I go, those are not principles, really. Those are just certain things you know how to do. So we go off of a principles-based system. We look at, you know, how do we layer progression when we break down a movement pattern, you know, the size of the bag, the weight of the bag, how we position your body and how we position the bag are all going to influence the exercise and the exercise selection. And when you start walking down people down this path, they either go down one of two roads, right? They completely blow you off because they're frustrated and confused. Or B, they become very open-minded and receptive because they realize that you're trying to give them a little bit more thought process than just get them to use a new tool. You know, there'll always be those people that go, no, I got this. It's fine. I know what this is. And it reminds me of a story a friend of mine told me. He was at a magazine shoot, and he said one of the models had never used a TRX before. And he goes, yeah, I just don't like these. And the guy goes, well, why don't you like him? He goes, I just never got it. I just don't think you need it. And, you know, a lot of times I think when we feel like we don't understand something, we get kind of defensive. And if we don't choose to ask questions about it and take time to learn about it, then we sort of just shove something off as not valuable. And, you know, when people come and they learn, you know, what the thought process is behind it, then all of a sudden you can learn the intent and the purpose, and that changes really the outcome of everything. And the whole handle thing has been quite comical in and of itself, just because, you know, the way people use sandbags is not actually accomplishing the goal they think. For example, when you grab the outside handles of a duffel bag, you're actually stabilizing the weight, which defeats the whole purpose of using an unstable weight. When you actually use handles, you displace the center of mass. So when you start moving the weight actually shifts and moves far more. So all those people that are like, oh, I do it because it's hardcore. No, you do it because there wasn't a better alternative back in the day. And now that there's a better option, it's kind of silly not to take that option. You know, it's like anything else. You know, you could still go walk to work, but we have cars now, and that's way better. And so it's when you enlighten people upon what they're actually achieving, then you realize like, oh, wow, this is such a better thing. And again, it goes back to, you know, you're always going to have people that almost are mad that they didn't think of it. I literally had someone one time come up to me and he goes, man, Josh, you know, congratulations on the whole DVRT thing. Man, I should come up with that. I said, yeah, the ball, the handle thing was already taken. So was the body weight on the strap. So I had to do something else. I mean, people win a gold medal for lifting a metal bar that you put these wheels on. So, I mean, it's one of those things when you just change the narrative a little bit, you change people's perspective. And, you know, there'll always be the people that reject it because it strikes something personal with them. That's fine. I've started to realize, you know, I'm getting old now, that there's emotional and there's logical arguments. And I don't go down the road of emotional arguments too much, other than just to have fun with people and just walk them through their own emotional bias that they obviously have.
You know, I think it's so interesting. You touched on it's the implementation and the whole concept of, well, I could have thought of that. I think that mentality comes about because there are so many things that come out now that, to use the word you hate, are just toys. There's no education behind them. It's so much easier to develop a prototype and run Facebook ads to try to sell something without any system to implement it. What advice do you have to maybe fitness novices that are looking at, you know, they're bombarded with products and products and products? What's a good way to tell what's the fluff and what's actually useful?
That's a great question. You know, it can be, I am thankful that I'm kind of old now, because it's a lot easier to do. And if I was, you know, 20 years younger, it'd probably be very overwhelming because of the amount of information, how it's presented a lot of times, because you'll get, you know, companies using big words and it sounds good. You're like, okay, yeah, I'm using neuromuscular intercoordinated feedback loop systems. And, you know, it's sort of like, it reminds me of the Will Ferrell thing, you know, no one knows what it means, but it's provocative. You know, and so I think, you know, there was a great book everyone seems to love now, but I think it's been around for a while. It's like, start with a why. Okay, you know, why am I doing this? How is it solving a problem? Can you walk me down through the process of how is it providing a solution for me? If I pose you a problem, how can it be a solution for me? And, you know, I give things an opportunity. Like, you know, with the kettlebell example I gave you at the beginning, like, You know, I bought a couple kettlebells and I tried it for myself. And I was like, huh, I really don't feel confident that I know what I'm doing. So, you know, I'm going to go with this thing if for no other reason, just to learn how to use this implement and see if there's something more to it. And there's been times over the years that I've gone to programs and I've been blown away. And there's times I've been like, wow, that was a big waste of time. But it was never a waste of time because I could then speak, you know, at least from a personal perspective upon what I thought of a program or instructor or system. And at least it gave me perspective on it. And if I thought someone was full of it, that's okay. I don't go around advertising it, but you know, if you're going to ask my opinion, at least I've experienced it. You know, nothing irritates me more when people don't experience things and don't go, you know, try to learn about it and then they try to speak about it. I had one gentleman who's a big kettlebell guy and he tried to tell me that sandbag exercise was one way. And so I said, no, you don't, you're not really understanding the concepts. It's not the same. And he go, and finally it broke down to, I said to him, I said, you know, if someone said a kettlebell was this, but never used a kettlebell, would that bother you? He said, yeah, of course. I said, well, you've told me you've never used a sandbag. So you're trying to speak intelligently about something you've never done. And I think coaches, you know, fall in that trap because we think all tools act and function the same. But more and more, the research is showing us that actually they don't. And they all create unique stimuluses that if we start to appreciate those things, then we can create better programs for people and we can start using the right tools. So, you know, I always tell people, I go, you know, if you're intrigued by something, ask some questions. What is your system? What are you trying to accomplish? What are the progressions? How is this a solution for my clients or myself? And then if it all sounds good and you're into it, then try it. You may find that you fall in love with it. You may find that it doesn't actually fulfill the promises that it set forth. But, you know, at some point we are all sort of kinesthetic learners too. You know, we learn by feel, especially those of us that are in the industry. So, you know, if sort of the upfront stuff sounds good, then take that opportunity because chances are you're not going to be investing that much. And chances are if you don't invest into it, you could fall behind. We were just very appreciative that Alan Cosgrove was on a podcast recently and basically, you know, when he was asked what's next, he sort of named really us and TRX, and which was funny because both of our companies have been around over a decade. And, you know, what he was trying to get people to understand is, you know, TRX is more than push-ups and rows and DVRT is more than cleans and squats. And when you become a master craftsman at these tools that give you an opportunity to have versatility and really solve problems, then, you know, you appear to be such a better coach because you can problem solve better than anyone else.
As a trainer, we definitely always have to be learning. We have to be educating ourselves. And on top of like researching, we have to then experience the things and try them out. You guys have the in-person certifications, but you're also now offering an online certification. Do you feel like there's any difference between learning in person and the online certification and what you get out of them?
Well, I mean, online, you get to be spared my bad jokes. So that usually come in person. So that's maybe one benefit to the online. Well, obviously, I think anytime you can get personalized instruction, that's always a benefit. But the reality is there's going to be certain areas of the country or the world we're just not going to be available in. And so we don't want those people to suffer, you know, not having the opportunity to learn our system. And, you know, we've had actually people that have taken our online training and then come to a course. And you know, that's fantastic. That's obviously the ideal. But, you know, I feel like, you know, the most important thing to convey to people are concepts. And so if we can convey those concepts and people can take the opportunity to learn them, then they can make the decision from there if they want to learn further. But then they can start applying those concepts to the tool. And, you know, there's been people that have come to live courses and they're like, hey, I've been following your stuff for 4 or 5 years. And I just realized I've been doing it all wrong because there's a lot of nuances and details that go into doing things right. And I think, you know, of course, in social media, we have to show some sexy stuff. But, you know, oftentimes people don't realize what led up to that. And they get so fascinated with the dynamics of a movement that they don't take time to sort of go, how did they break that down? How did they actually create that movement? And that's really what we want people to learn. And what we did for the online courses, we did set some higher standards so that when people started participating in that, they had to go through and do a little bit more work because they didn't have the involvement with us. And let's say at a live course. So, you know, people that have done the online training have done really well because they've had to go a little bit of an extra mile for it. And it's made them take time to digest the principles and concepts and techniques a little bit more. But I always think live learning is the best. You know, whenever I want to learn something, I always try to learn it from the horse's mouth. I know that's not, you know, an option for everybody, but as many times as it is, I try to take advantage of it. And, you know, that goes into just a little segue of just like, I think people go to too many programs. And, you know, I think it was just a discussion in the Perform Better Long Beach Q&A was like, you know, I'm going to talk like the old guy, like get off my lawn guy. You know, back in my day, you know, you went to a course maybe once a quarter. And now literally, you know, we run into people that are going courses every week. And I'm like, how do you even know or remember how to implement what you learned 2 weeks ago? And you don't get an opportunity to be a craftsman anymore. You're just jumping from things to things because people are worried about missing out. I'm like, if that stuff is good, it'll still be here, you know, in a couple months. You don't have to worry about it. You won't fall behind. You know, you're better at becoming a master craftsman than you are, you know, having a whole bunch of tools that you don't know how to use. Like, I'm not allowed to build a lot of things in my house because I don't know how to use a lot of the tools, unless you want it to be crooked or possibly upside down. But the tools I know how to use, I'm really good at. And so it's, you know, back, I remember one coach once saying, like, you know, you shouldn't ever open up a kettlebell gym. This is when kettlebell gyms were, you know, the big thing, because all I need to do is have a kettlebell and a medicine ball, and I have a better gym than you. And I used to think like that was a very true statement. And now sort of many years later, I'm like, well, not necessarily, because if I can use that kettlebell better than you can, I can deliver a better experience and result. So I could actually win. And so I think if people understood, if they took the time when they went to courses to digest the material, to practice coaching it, because not only do our clients have to get better at doing it, we have to get good at coaching it. And that's why our clients need that time, is because, you know, it takes time for us to learn our voice with new concepts and principles. We try to do that for people, but obviously everyone's their own individual person and not every cue is going to work for everyone. So, you know, I think if people could slow down and take these courses and really try to develop some mastery with them, they'd find that they actually get a better return on their investment than if they just try to jump from one course to another course to another course every weekend.
You know, I think with the advancement of technology coming so quickly, it's opening so many opportunities for people to learn the right way, but then also to learn the wrong way. And with these new products, with these new courses, where do you, I'm gonna phrase this as a two-part question. Where do you wish the future of fitness would go, but also where do you see it realistically going?
I think realistically, you're going to see more online material. I think, you know, there's a lot of different organizations that try and do that. I mean, obviously the benefit is you can reach more people. And like you said, we have better platforms to, if you do it with the right intent, you could deliver a really great experience for the user. I think the danger in that is that, you know, people don't take the time to really work with a specific, you know, methodology or system, and they just sort of jump from one thing to another. And because people often don't understand the point of certification, it's like the argument with regulation in fitness. Like, people always argue when we bring up regulation that, oh, well, because, you know, if they develop regulation in fitness, that doesn't mean you're a good trainer. I go, you're right. You know, the whole point of regulation and really certification is to show that you've demonstrated minimum competency, not maximum. And so I think, you know, what people don't understand with certifications, and we try to relay this during our programs, is that you pass our minimum competency. And that means we want you to continue down the road of mastery. And so, unfortunately, I think just with more and more stuff out there and how fast information transmits, I think, unfortunately, it's going to be a lot of people taking original content, trying to spin it and try as their own and not really understanding it and conveying bad messages. Because as you guys can probably appreciate, the most popular coaches on social media or online are not necessarily the best coaches. And so I always warn people to be smart consumers. Do a little research. I mean, if you're going to spend several hundred dollars with someone or something, do some research. Like, you know, either talk to the company or the person, look for references, look for discussions about them, look for different experiences that they have. How long have they been around? How long have they been doing this? Because I'll see people that take a course one week and then about 2 months later, they're running their own course on that material. And that's a really dangerous, I think, trap for a lot of people to fall into. I think, you know, as technology improves and we have more options, as like you said, we need to be better consumers and do our homework a bit more. And that just takes time to talk to other people, do a little research on your own. You know, like you guys said, you could do a little research on the internet pretty darn fast. So it doesn't take much to sort of find out whether something's legitimate or not. I'd like the future to be going towards, you know, the idea of mastery and giving people more time. I think, unfortunately, you know, with fitness being a hard business for a lot of individuals, they panic when things aren't going well and they think they need to go jump to about 10 different courses to fix their business. When in actuality, if they did one or two things really well, it probably improved their business more so. And if people have a better business, then they can take their time becoming better students and better coaches over the long run, instead of having this panic reaction of like, oh my God, you know, think we lost another client. We got to do something. Let's do this course now this month. They said it's really good. We're going to, you know, save ourselves. It's usually not a course or a program. It's sort of reevaluation of how the business is functioning, prioritizing the client and the experience of the client better. And, you know, when people sort of can work from a position of strength versus panic, it ends up being a lot better for everyone.
As trainers, we always go back to basics and we try and bring our clients back to basics to sort of start and help them grow. And it's sort of like with our businesses too, we need to come back to basics. We need to just remember that if we master different things and if we apply those principles with our clients, we can help them out a lot more versus getting caught up in the latest marketing scheme or just going after the newest toy to use, but really returning to basics. With your certifications, is this all about the movements? Do you go a little bit over the marketing with people and sort of help them realize what they need to do and how they can market themselves to promote the good things that they're doing?
Yeah, you know, our marketing is super simple. It's how you solve someone's problem. You know, it's, you know, when you sit down with people and you got to dig a little deeper than the superficial answers than they usually tell you, because they usually don't know the real answer. You know, when people come to our program, rarely is it because they want to learn to use a sandbag. I mean, that's not something that people are going to spend the money on to come to our program. It's usually that they've heard that it can resolve problems in their training or they're for themselves. And so, you know, really, when people go through what we're teaching them as a system, they see so many opportunities to reach so many different populations. You know, I always tell people, I go, don't go leave our program and go, hey, I'm a DBRT instructor. I mean, there's value in that, but don't say, hey, you want to come to my sandbag class? Like, I always laugh, like, would you rather go to a TRX, Calibo, or Sandbag class? Or would you rather, do you think your clients would prefer going to a how to prevent low back and shoulder injury class? And, you know, because the tools are just the ways, are just the means to the end, right? They're just ways that we're getting people to that end. And so for a lot of the clients, they don't care what the tool is. They have these specific goals in mind. You know, they'll come to you there. I want to lose 25 pounds, but by the way, my left knee really hurts and I can't lift my right arm above my head. And that hurts a lot of the time, which means I can't sleep well, which means I feel horrible at, you know, pretty much every day, which means, you know, my whole family gets on my nerve, which means I can't, you know, perform well at work. You know, and they walk down you start walking them down this process and their goal really isn't, you know, that 25 pounds. That 25 pounds means something to them. They think it means a better living, way of living. And so when you start to give them pain-free movement and you start to give them success in the gym, then they start to be really motivated to do more. I think most of us as human beings, we're motivated to do more when we do something well. And, you know, so if you know where to start people and how to progress them, then it's really easy to give them wins in the gym. Because I think I don't know about you guys, but I rarely ever got someone coming to me going, you know what, Josh, here's my problem. I'm losing way too fast. I'm getting too muscular. I look too good. Usually people come to us because they have problems that they can't fix on their own. And so, you know, when they think that they walk into the gym and they think that they're going to have losses, like they're not going to be able to do things well. Like, how many times have you guys heard a client go and go, I can't do that. That's going to be too hard. I don't know, my back. I don't know. So I think, you know, clients try to talk themselves into, you know, that they're going to have, you know, a lot of losses in the gym versus wins. And so I think it's for us as coaches to understand how to break down movement to put them in a position of success. Because if they have success and they leave with success, there's no way they're not going to keep coming back. And they keep coming back and having consistency, you'll have better retention because they're going to be the ones that go tell their friends, hey, you know that gym down the street? Like, I had this back pain and now I don't even think about my back. Like, that's powerful stuff. They don't care what the tool was. You want them to sit there and go, they have ultimate sandbags over there. That is so cool. Or kettlebells or whatever it is. Because they don't, that's not the message they're going to relate to their clients. And, you know, even if they do, like, I remember years ago, I had this, you know, cute, older, like, she was in her 60s, Southern Belle type grandma, and she was telling her friends how she was flipping a tire, and that scared the living bejesus out of all her friends. You know, that's not how they wanted to come. But when she started focusing on, like, wow, her knee pain was so much better, and now she had more energy to spend time with her husband, she can go hiking with him, like, those are meaningful things to people. So, you know, our marketing is pretty simple. It's like, how are you going to put, if you put people in position to succeed, you're going to solve the problems that they really have in their life, which means you're going to have better retention and they're going to be more raving fans. You want to develop these raving fans, people that just like can't stop talking about you. Like, even if their friends are like, oh my God, shut up about that training. Like, you know, people make fun of CrossFit, but, you know, the beauty of CrossFit is they don't shut up about CrossFit. And so it's like, wow, you know that person is a raving fan of that. And I've known people that have gone to CrossFit simply because people, their friends were just raving and raving and raving about it. And they finally broke down and tried it. So I think, you know, from the marketing angle, it's never about the tool. It's never about trying to be hardcore. It's listening to the client, trying to develop a plan with them. Like, how are they going to be successful? And then, gaining that trust by actually delivering on the things that you say you can do for them. You know, if you say you can help with their back, if you say you can help them with their weight loss, like, you better have a plan in place to deliver. And that's sort of what we want to do in the course, is give you the tools to be able to do that so that you can really exceed those clients' expectations.
That's such an important point for any trainer starting out. It's not the features, the tools, it's the benefits you can provide, because really the equipment is just sort of fun and it can be something that people are excited to use. But really what they want is the benefit that makes them feel better, that makes them move better, that makes them reach their goals so they can do all the things they want in their life. If you had like a new trainer coming to you, what resources would you recommend they look at to sort of help them get going so they could provide those benefits for their clients?
I think, you know, it's going to be a tough thing, because you don't want to choose one thing at a time. And that's going to be the thing, like we talked about earlier, that you're going to have to fight, because you're going to have, you know, peers. I've done it to peers when I was younger too. Like, oh, have you checked this out? This is freaking cool. You're going to have to fight that a little bit. And I'll tell you a quick story, just because I've known him for a long time. It's always a story that stands out with me. I've known Alan Cosgrove for about 15 years now. And I remember early 2000s coming into a program, thinking the program was so cool. I called him. I'm like, oh man, you got to check this thing out. He said, Josh, that sounds so cool. He goes, right now I can help 90% of my clients with what I know. And I need to focus on becoming a better businessman. And I'm just going to devote the next 2 years of my life to do that. Because if I'm successful, then I can dedicate as much time as I want to being a student of fitness. And I'm like, oh, you're crazy. You're going to miss out on all this stuff. You're going to fall behind. And, you know, fast forward today, he's one of the industry leaders. He's invited to work with companies like Nike and Zappos and all these things, because he made sure his weaknesses became his strengths. And so I think, you know, a trainer nowadays needs to find a good training program to follow. I'll obviously biasly recommend ours, because I think it's a good system, like you mentioned. Whether you're using the Ultimate Sandbag or not, the system and the principles will carry you much further than a lot of other programs that are focused on exercises and workouts. I think if you take time to realize that when you open a gym, you just become a business owner. So you must treat it like a business. If you want to work for a gym, that's fine. That's awesome. In fact, I think too many trainers don't do that, because I think there's a lot of trainers that just want to be trainers, and that's totally cool. But don't open up a gym thinking you're going to be just a trainer. And so I think, you know, with that respect, if you can find balance between being a good coach and developing those skills and becoming a better business owner, that's going to give you a lot of power. And the last thing is gaining experience. I remember when we were doing a program in Korea, one of the young trainers like, oh, how do I make sure I never make mistakes with clients? I'm like, that's not going to happen. You're going to make mistakes, but those are learning opportunities. And, you know, I can always tell when someone's talking and they don't have the experience behind it by what they say and the things that they do. So, you know, I think people don't take enough time of, you know, learning something and then trying to apply it for a while. And it's not something that won't work for everybody, but it may not work for you. It may not fit your personality. It may not fit your mentality. It may not fit your situation. So I think you also got to model yourself after people that are doing the same thing you want to be doing. I always find it funny, if you're opening up an 800 square foot gym, don't go follow someone that has a 10,000 square foot facility. It's not going to be the same thing. So, I mean, I think also you want to follow people that are going down the same track as you. So, you know, our program, I think it's, you know, FMS is a good baseline for people to start understanding how to break down movement as well. Credible resources, people like Alan Cosgrove, Mike Boyle are wonderful resources, because they've been around a while. They've evolved over time. And what I can appreciate about those individuals is that they'll evolve and they'll change what they say. And you should. You shouldn't be doing the same thing year in and year out. And you know, they have success with doing that. You can directly point to those successes too. I always hate the people that like can never say who they worked with because it's a secret. Or it's been like thousands of people and they can't name anyone. You should be able, just like a coach, be able, you know, to refer people to people you've worked with if you're investing in a program. And, you know, so, you know, one of the things when people question, you know, should they do stuff with us, we're like, we're happy to give you, you know, a whole bunch of people to go talk to about our program. And you should be doing the same thing, and realize you want to develop that type of relationship with your clients too. Like, you know, develop that referral system, like teach your clients how to refer. And that's something that a lot of trainers don't do. Like, you know, what is the message you want to be known for? How do you want to be known in your community and with your clients? And make the clients the superstar. I think to the point you said, Corey, like, you know, the modalities. I always crack up when I look at a trainer's website and they got their equipment listed on their website. I'm like, no one cares. Literally no one cares but the trainer that's probably putting it up. Versus if you highlighted your clients and what you've been able to do for those people, it's a totally different game. I mean, I think it totally changes your success as a coach and the way you appeal to people.
You know, I think that's fantastic advice for a trainer starting out, but also a good refresher course for people who might be getting a little stale with their practices, whether it comes to business or training. And so now that you've answered all the easy questions, we have a little segment called the Fast Five Fitness Facts, where we're going to fire off five quick questions at you. And these are the really hard ones. So I'm going to start with question number one, which is, what is your favorite exercise?
My favorite is probably our clean and press, but that doesn't always mean I enjoy doing it.
What's the exercise you love to hate?
I think for me, it's a front load single leg deadlift because it challenges some of my weaknesses that I know need to be stronger.
And what is the best book you've ever read?
The best book, you know, I think I'll go back to a Stephen Covey book. So it's about productivity and it gives you perspective on, you know, life that you can carry over to training, which is just simply the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I think it just as an overall scheme of how to look at life and your business, it was a pretty awesome book.
What's your favorite pump up song?
You know, I'd have to go with Metallica's Enter Sandman. I just think that's appropriate.
That's a classic.
Yeah.
And last question, if you could train with one person, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's a great one. I think I'd like try to take one of the classic strongmen. And I don't know if I have a favorite because they're all so different. But, you know, I was always intrigued by people like George Hackenschmidt because, you know, nowadays it's so unique to have someone who has really true all-around fitness. And they didn't have the science to develop it. So I'm so intrigued about how they came about with understanding the body so highly without having the science behind it.
Well, I just want to say thanks, Josh, for coming on the show today. And can you give our listeners like a place they can reach you and your website and everything that they can find you at and more information?
Sure. Our website is dvrtfitness.com. We have over, I think, 700 free YouTube videos that you can search if you go to Sandbag Fitness or Ultimate Sandbag. Tons of, you know, free content so people can see what we do and why we do it. People can reach us at info@ultimatesandbagtraining.com. We try to pick the longest URL ever. And then again, they can ask us tons of questions. We never sort of fear from that. And we have a social media group, DVRT Fitness, that a lot of our master instructors hang out at. And then what's great is they have such different backgrounds. So when people ask me, like, how do you use DVRT for marathon running? I'm like, I don't know. I've never ran a marathon, but I can talk to have you talk to Steve Tommaso, who does them all the time and uses DVRT as a foundation. And so we always have someone who can speak intelligently about achieving a specific goal.
Well, perfect, Josh. Thanks so much again for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Fitness Hacks Podcast by Redefining Strength. For the show notes and more episodes, visit redefiningstrength.com.